I'm Maryland Morning producer Matt Purdy, and this is a special podcast we've put together with all of our interviews with the candidates vying for the Republican nomination for governor in 2014. Each interview is about 10 minutes. We've arranged them in alphabetical order, and we begin with David Craig.
This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland's primary election will take place June 24th. Next week, we'll speak with Democrats running for governor. This week, we've been talking to the four men running for the Republican nomination. One of them is Harford County Executive David Craig. He's also represented Harford County in the House of Delegates and State Senate, and he served as mayor of Havre de Grace, where he lives now. He joins me on the line from Salisbury. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be on it.
Why did you decide to seek the office of governor?
I wanted to give the people of the state of Maryland, who are very frustrated and often forgotten, a true voice in Annapolis, someone who has the experience to do what needs to be done to help Maryland be as good a state as it was when I was growing up here, and so that my grandchildren will still want to go and live here. So I wanted to give them a true choice. It was the same thing when I decided to run for the city council back in 1979. I wanted to work on quality of life. I just didn't want to sit on the sidelines and complain. And I thought, let's use our background and our record and make sure that we move forward.
And what would be your top priority?
The top priority always is making sure you do well on taxes and reduce taxes so that you can build your economy so new jobs can be created. It's like a triangle that all goes together. You have to work on all three of those. So one can't be more important than the other. You can't say we're going to create jobs. Well, you have to then make the economy better. You can't just make the economy better. You have to lower taxes and take less money out of people's pockets and punish businesses less. So those three things go right together, one after the other, as I say, just in a little triangle to make sure that we build a good base here for the state of Maryland.
What's the one thing that would be different 4 years from now if you were elected governor?
There would be so many things different people would not remember.
Okay.
The first would be everyone would vote themselves a pay increase because we would eliminate the income tax. That is one of the highest taxes that people pay. It takes too much money out of their pocket, and it really hurts businesses and individuals and the middle and working class. So we want to phase that out. But we can also say we thank God we didn't have a snow tax this year. And with the rain tax, we're going to get rid of that. We're going to work on the gas tax that people don't know is going to be going higher in 2016. Many people are frustrated with the tolls they have to pay that are so high. And so we will work on those things to make sure that we lower those, and that will be one of the main things. And they will also notice that the services do not disappear, because I have the experience as county executive and as mayor where I was able to lower our tax rates, still provide services, still have the jobs that we needed, and build our economy back.
Well, let me ask you about that, specifically the taxes that go into the general fund, like the income tax. How would you make up the difference?
Well, the one thing that we saw, one, first, is that we will actually spend less money, and that is the first thing you should do. And, you know, I was a history teacher, and I learned a lot from reading biographies, and one of my favorite is about Calvin Coolidge. He is a man, as president, who lowered our income tax rates and ended up doubling the amount of money that came in because the economy got better. And we saw that in Harford County by lowering our property tax. We saw more businesses move in, so actually, as I tell people, the pie got bigger. So we had more money to spend, but not from individuals, but because we had more people there. So that's what you do. By lowering taxes, you can have more businesses. That means you have more workers. That means you have more money spent by individuals. That means you have a bigger base. So you don't need to do that. And then the second thing is you do lower the size of government by eliminating things that are duplications in different departments that you don't need, services that have not been sufficient to do what they need to do, not instituting new programs that really haven't worked. So we will start phasing those things out too. So we will be spending less money, and we will be making sure that more money is brought in because of a more diverse and bigger economy.
You mentioned eliminating duplicative programs, but what other programs would you eliminate to make the kind of savings you need to make?
Well, the one thing I'm experienced as a mayor, and I'm experienced as a county executive, and I've seen it, how we've gotten rid of things internally, and it will be the first year we will be looking at the budget, and we will have department heads, secretaries. I have department heads as county executive, and I told them when I first became county executive, you have to make your budget, 5% smaller. As governor, I will say you have to make your budget 3% smaller. 3% saves us 1.2 $2 billion. So over the first 4 years, that saves us almost $5 billion. We let the individual secretaries of their department look at what's a duplication. But I can tell you, I am sure there are many things that are there. We have experiences with communication technology where one department may want to buy a certain hardware or software, and it turns out another department already had it and they didn't need to buy it. So you have things like that where you can save money. I learned all this from a man who owned a department store in Havre de Grace when I was younger. And he said, if you take care of the pennies, the dollars take care of themselves. That's the thing. You work at that level. It's not you're going to go and say, I'm cutting all this immediately. You work with your department heads and say, look, you work on it. If you can't, we'll come up with some solutions for you. And guess what? They will come up with those solutions.
You have mentioned your experience as a teacher. You were a teacher and assistant principal for 34 years. You mentioned being mayor. You have held political jobs like that and county executive. All your opponents in the Republican primary are businessmen and have made that business experience a big part of their platforms. So how do you answer those who say business experience is the best preparation to run the state?
It isn't actually the best experience. I worked in a factory for 6 years. They don't know that. I worked in businesses on the summer, on weekends, because even though I was a teacher, salaries were tough back then in the 70s. Inflation was high. So I did work in businesses and knew what that was like working with them. Did I own them? No. Did any of mine ever go bankrupt? No. So it's important. But many people don't understand that you may have done a business, but businesses are different than government in many different ways. And so you have to have experience in what happens and actually doing the budgets yourself, not just presenting the budgets, if you're a certain type of businessman, you're focused on a certain smaller thing. I'm not a developer like one of them. So I've actually presented budgets, actually done them, actually read them. And it is different on the government side than it is on the business side. So is it good to have that? Yes, it's good to have that to some degree, but not necessarily to be the executive director of the entire department. I mean, the people of Harford County selected me to be, I run a business in a sense. Yes, you call it government, but I run an $800 million business. That is so much bigger than all these other businesses that everyone else has run. And we've done it effectively and efficiently. We were the only county in the state this year to get the new AAA bond rating. All three agencies said, you have been so prudent in how you spend money. You've been so good in how you've diverted your economy. And you've been so good on projects that we're going to give you AAA bond rating, which saved us millions of dollars in selling bonds. Many of these people don't know how that works. They haven't done that. That's an important thing to do. But it is a business. Is it government? Yes. But it has, I have 250,000 people who own my business, and they've selected me twice to be the CEO of their business, and we've done it.
That's Harford County Executive David Craig here on WIPR Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Craig is running for the Republican nomination for governor. Maryland has embraced the Affordable Care Act under the O'Malley administration. How would you deal with Obamacare if elected?
The thing that needed to be done was that there are 2,500 brokers who already had the ability and the background of helping people get access to insurance. We did not need to create a new bureaucracy and spend over $240 million to have some company come in and not do it correctly. We could have come up with a website that just said, here are the companies that are located. You select which one you want, and then that company will be allowed to get a check from our funding for this for $25 or $30, and they could have done it. I spoke to people who own insurance companies like that. They said it would have only taken us 10 minutes to get the average person into an insurance.
So is that what you would do?
That's what I would do now. It's no need to even go to the state level, to the federal level, to go to Connecticut, to go to any of these other places. We could have let private businesses. I mean, I was watching the Super Bowl and I saw Blue Cross Blue Shield do an ad where they said it would take 10 to 15 minutes for the average person to become one of their clients.
We're almost out of time, and I want to squeeze one more topic in here if I can. In a forum last month, you said you would roll back some of the gun control measures passed by the legislature last year. What would those be, and how would
all
you do
the ones
it?
They would be all the ones that were just approved, because they are not directly going to do anything on crime. Those are just about getting a headline that you did something that you think is going to help, but it really doesn't help. Actually, over 100,000 guns were bought when that came out. So it actually pushed more people to buy guns. But Harford County, I'm very proud of, we are number one in the state in being the safest community in the state. And it's not because we have special gun control laws. It's because we have good deputy sheriffs and a sheriff and good state's attorney who actually know how to work the process. So it's not just about having, quote, gun control. And usually crime is taken place by someone who's already illegally gotten the weapon.
We have to leave it there. I thank you.
All right. Thank you.
David Craig, currently Harford County Executive, running for the Republican nomination for governor. His running mate is Delegate Jeannie Hathaway, who represents the Lower Eastern Shore. We've spoken with all the major candidates for the Republican nomination this week and have links to all those interviews on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. We'll speak with the Democratic candidates next week. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us on 88.1.
You're listening to a special podcast we've put together with all of Maryland Morning's interviews with Republican candidates for governor. We continue with Ron George.
Thanks, Nathan. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland's primary election will take place June 24th. Over the next few weeks on our show, we'll be hearing from all the major candidates in statewide races. Next week, we'll speak with Democrats running for governor. This week, we're talking to the four men running for the Republican nomination. One of them is Ron George. He's a member of the House of Delegates representing Eastern Anne Arundel County, the area around Annapolis, in the legislature since 2007. He's also a jeweler and has stores in Annapolis and Severna Park. He lives in Arnold, Maryland, and he joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Sheila.
Why did you decide to run for governor?
Well, it's not something I aspired to. Same thing for House of Delegates. I didn't aspire to it. People would ask me to. And I felt there was a little disconnect as a business owner to many of the issues there that I thought I could contribute in constructive ways to help create jobs and to help businesses. And there are ways to do that. And I think we'll get a chance to talk about that.
But what would be your top priority? What is it that would change if you were governor?
Well, I'm very concerned about the people that are hurting here. I think many people in the Eastern Shore of Western Maryland feel very forgotten. We have, and then Baltimore City, and we just got stats in that shows that Prince George's is going down. They're the only jurisdiction that did not have an increase in housing stats and housing sales. In fact, they're half of what they were for March alone. And what's happening in Prince George's, it concerns me. I've seen what's happened in large sections of Baltimore. I will be a governor for everybody. I have a plan, I think, that'll help to bring jobs back to the area. And I think that's very important. It's not all about just getting the college education.
Yeah, your economic plan to increase the number of jobs focuses specifically on Baltimore City and Baltimore County, mm-hmm. And talks about manufacturing jobs. Why that geographic area focus and why manufacturing jobs?
Because people aren't concentrating on it. They're talking about tech and biotech in Montgomery County and Central Maryland. And we, all our jurisdictions, Prince George's, Anne Arundel County, all of them send a lot of money to Baltimore, and it's become a huge drain on the whole state. But Baltimore City itself can't meet its own goals and its infrastructure. And so we need to fix that. We're not going to fix Maryland until we help Baltimore. And so I want to bring the entry-level, mid-level jobs back with manufacturing especially, but also the import-export jobs. We're expanding the harbor. It will increase jobs for the construction. But what about after that? We need to attract those businesses. They want to be located close.
Well, of course, you're not the first person who's thought it would be great if Baltimore had a stronger tax base.
Yes.
What is it you think you can do that has not been done?
Well, I think it's my experience in business. I've always been asked to testify by National Federation of Independent Business and Chambers of Commerce on how to help business on different bills that were up there. And that's one of the things that got me interested in running over 8 years ago. And I think that I have that I can bring to the table. I have 40 years private sector experience. You can't teach that. It's just something you learn about how to do things. And I think I can bring that to the table and help to create those jobs. You have to create an environment. But also in one area that we can help is manufacturing. We are ranked 50th out of 50 states in new manufacturing firms. We've been at that for over 10 years. So we have all these empty areas throughout Baltimore City and in Baltimore County. We need to bring them back. I'm not against labor. Everybody being able to create a job is probably, and people having a job is better than any social program you could ever create out there. And so I want to strengthen that ability to get them back here. And we've lost that. We put a heavy concentration on college degrees and graduating from college. But there are many entry-level, mid-level jobs where people get in the door and then are able to move up also. And we seem to have forgotten that in this state. And I want to help create that and bring that back.
Okay, I get you have experience as a businessman, and that's taught you a lot. I'm still not really quite clear on what you
how you would make this, how you would strengthen this tax base. What you would do to bring those jobs.
There are different levels that you bring a tax base back, and that has to do with lowering some of those taxes at the manufacturing level. Our tax on equipment in the state is 4 times higher than the national average. That's one reason that businesses are leaving. That's a big added tax upon them. We need to lower that in ways. And then how do I counter that?
Mm-hmm.
I counter that by the waste that we found through many of our audits. I want money to get where it's supposed to. I'm not going to cut programs or anything, but I do think there's a lot of money out there that hasn't had the proper oversight, and there's a lot of waste. The federal audits have shown that. Many of our state audits show it. Every time they do an audit, we find the same mistakes being made. So I think there's a way to generate jobs, create a lower tax rate, just modest, bringing it down, and it'll turn things around quite a bit.
It's Delegate Ron George, who represents Anne Arundel County in the state legislature on 88.1. This is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Ron George is also a jeweler, a small businessman, and he's running in the Republican primary for governor. Part of your economic plan calls for creation of children's zones in Baltimore's. What are they, and how would that work?
The Baltimore Sun was surprised, and much like your question, that a Republican would be concentrating on the Baltimore area. And it's also Hagerstown and some of these other mid-level cities that need these things brought back, too. But Baltimore's very important. Baltimore children's zones are modeled, I would model them after the Harlem children's zones. You have high crime areas where there seemed to be no hope for the kids, and the schooling just was almost non-existent, failing schools. It creates safe areas in those high crime areas that are incubators for crime, and it helps these kids. It's given them hope. Their test scores and attitudes have gone up. We've seen positive results. I first started talking about this about 4 or 5 years ago, and even since then, now we have proven stats from Harlem of things that are working. It does create more of a police presence just to create a safer area at first for these students. When they come out of school, they're being approached by drug dealers and things now. We want to get those drug dealers and gangs out of those areas and create safe areas. It works. It needs to be done. We need to turn these areas around. No one's offering answers.
How much of an investment would it take?
You know, at first, there's that initial investment, after 3 years, you're getting a return on it because there's such a decrease in crime. You know, I worked the inner cities. In New York, I worked with homeless and runaways, pushouts. The sad story of pushouts. I could tell you many sad stories. And the kids out on the street, and girls forced into prostitution, into drugs and then prostitution, the human trafficking. I get it. I know what's happening. And I think we need to do something about that. I think anybody with a conscience should want to help.
One measure that passed the General Assembly this year that you opposed quite vocally was the increase in the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. Yeah. In particular, you proposed stripping away the exemption for the Six Flags amusement park in Prince George's County.
Yes.
So quickly, since time is passing, why did you oppose the minimum wage? Why did you oppose the exemption for Six Flags?
First of all, the minimum wage with such a huge increase at once is not based on free market economics. And because anytime you do something that's not based on that, there's ramifications. So you have to be very careful. You have to do it gradually. And this was so much at once. And what it does is that we're already called the highest tax state for businesses. Well, I would say we're 41st, but when you combine it with the regulatory atmosphere here and everything, it's one of the most unfriendly for business. We're not attracting those jobs. This business is struggling to stay here. And then we're going to implement the Affordable Health Care Act, as it's called, the RAIN tax, and the minimum wage on businesses. And those three together are tougher than any of all those than all those tax increases that were done. It really hurts the state. I'm trying to get people to realize, wait a second, increasing jobs increases the tax base. We've got to be able to do that. We need the money, whether it be for environment or health care or whatever. We had, in the first 6 years of the O'Malley Brown administration, a decrease in 93,000 private sector jobs, according to DBED's own statistics. That's private sector, 93,000, but we increased government jobs, 26,500. So who's paying for the government jobs?
I thought the latest stats, though, were that jobs have recovered in Maryland, have recovered from the recession.
Yeah, we're 1.5% down still, which might not seem bad, but all the other states around us are much higher. And if it wasn't for people leaving the state for jobs, I think our unemployment rate would be higher. And the fact that we increased who we give the government jobs, it helps.
We're running out of time quickly, and I want to. You mentioned the Affordable Care Act. Your
yes.
your website calls for quote removing Obamacare and replacing it with a free market approach. How would you do that?
It's not getting rid of the exchange as it's supposed to work. The original idea of an exchange was basically it's a clearinghouse of all these insurance programs, and every employee manages their own. So you don't have to all be with the same company, which is making it more costly for everybody, that mandate that every business goes with one company. But I had a single mom working for me, and she had a child with special needs, Kennedy Krieger Institute and things. And we found if we had had the model that I'm talking about, she could have gotten this plan from Iowa that was specifically made for single moms like her with children with those type of conditions.
So you're talking about buying insurance across state lines.
It makes it more affordable, and it's portable. They can take it with them, and it works. And we seem to have trashed that, and we're going with these monopoly insurance companies, and it's much more costly.
We've got lots more questions, but no more time. I really appreciate your coming in. Yeah. Ron George, he's running for the Republican nomination for governor. His running mate is Shelley Aloy, a former alderman for the city of Frederick. We're speaking with all the major candidates for the Republican nomination this week. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us on 88.1.
Thank you.
You're listening to a special podcast we've put together with all of our interviews with the Republican candidates for governor. We continue with Larry Hogan.
Thanks, Nathan. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. As you've been hearing this morning, there are fewer than 2 months until the statewide primary in Maryland. Over the next few weeks, Maryland Morning is going to be hearing from all the major candidates in statewide races. Next week, we'll hear from those vying for the Democratic nomination for governor. This week, we're talking to the four men who want to reclaim the governor's house for the GOP. Leading the Republican candidates in current fundraising is Larry Hogan. He's a real estate broker and founder and chairman of the watchdog group Change Maryland. He lives in Edgewater in Anne Arundel County, and he's with me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Rough traffic this morning.
A little bit of a traffic jam.
You want to talk about transportation policy?
Well, is that a good one to start with?
But what I wanted to start with is, why are you running for this office?
Well, it's an excellent question. You know, I'm not a professional politician. I have not spent my entire life in elective office. I've spent most of my life in the private sector. About 25 years ago, I founded a business. I brought hundreds of companies and thousands of jobs into the state. But I've always been involved. I've always cared about what's been going on. I'm a lifelong Marylander who loves the state. And I was really concerned that we were way off track and heading in the wrong direction. I thought that the people of Maryland really deserve to have a real clear choice for a change. It wasn't out of any desire to be something, I can tell you that. It was more I felt an obligation that I needed to do something. And so I decided to step up and try to make a difference.
So what would be your top priority?
My top priorities are jobs, middle-class families, and turning around our economy. That's really what I've been focused on. 3 years ago, I founded this nonpartisan group, Change Maryland. Our focus has been on trying to bring fiscal responsibility and common sense to Annapolis. And we've grown into the largest and fastest growing grassroots organization in state history. We have 87,000 people involved. Nearly half of them are Democrats and independents who really feel as if our economy is off track, and we're concerned about trying to create more jobs and more opportunities for Maryland families.
Many people in Maryland may recognize your name. Your father, who is also named Lawrence Hogan, is well-known in politics, representing Maryland in Congress in the early 70s. He served as county executive of Prince George's County. You share a name. How do you distinguish yourself from him?
Well, I'm proud to be his son, I can tell you that. My dad's 86 years old now. He served in Congress back in the 70s, and it's interesting. It's actually 40 years ago he ran for governor of Maryland. So it's been quite a while. Not everybody remembers that, remembers him from back then, but I'm very proud to be his son. You know, he was on the House Judiciary Committee during the impeachment of Richard Nixon, and he was a Republican. He was the first Republican in Congress to come out for Nixon's impeachment. And I can tell you, as a kid, I really learned a lot from him and probably learned more in one day about integrity than most people learn in a lifetime.
What's true about you that wasn't true about him?
What's true about me that's not true about him? Well, he really had a long career in politics. He was a FBI agent and a professor, and then stayed in politics for a long time, was in Congress, ran for governor, was Prince George's County executive. I spent most of my life as a businessman. So I hope that maybe I picked up some of his good qualities. We're very different, and we spent our careers differently. But I did learn from him about the importance of public service and about the importance of paying attention to what's going on in government and politics. And that led me to leave my business for 4 years to go serve as a cabinet secretary in the Ehrlich administration. I wanted to give back and contribute what I could to help the state.
You are a small businessman. You certainly are casting your campaign from that base. You mentioned jobs. What would you do to create jobs in
Maryland? Well, there's really three major problems that have hurt us. We're currently, the most recent rankings show Maryland as the 41st out of 50 states in business friendliness. We're the seventh highest tax state in the nation. And what's happened, unfortunately, recently over the past 7 years is we've lost 10 of our 13 Fortune 500 companies out of the state. We've lost 6,500 small businesses and more than 100,000 jobs. Unemployment is up 76%. So it's the number one priority. We've got to stop the current trend and turn things around. And there are three things we can do. One, we have to change the anti-business attitude. Maryland's got to be open for business. We've got to be welcoming to job creators and people who will come to the state or stay in the state and provide opportunities for our citizens. Two, our tax policy is making it very difficult and driving businesses, jobs, and taxpayers out of the state in droves. We had the largest mass exodus of taxpayers fleeing our state of any state in the Mid-Atlantic region and one of the worst in the nation. 31,000 Marylanders have left, taking with them $1.7 billion a year. So we've got to take a strong look at our tax policy. We don't need to be the cheapest taxes in the country, but we certainly can't afford to be the highest. And third, our regulatory policy. It's got to be balanced, and we've got to. Currently, we have an irregular, unpredictable, and constantly changing regulatory policy where people are getting different answers and getting told one thing and then told to do something else. Businesses need to know what the rules are so they can do long-term planning. And we've got to fix all three of those things to start encouraging more businesses to stay in Maryland and more businesses to come to Maryland. That's really my top priority. I mean, everything I do is going to be focused on what's good for Maryland families? How do we create more jobs? How do we keep more families and businesses in Maryland?
That's Anne Arundel businessman Larry Hogan here on 88.1 Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Hogan is the founder of the watchdog group Change Maryland, and he's running in the Republican primary for governor. You have been less specific on taxes, as from what I've read, than your Republican rivals. Charles Lawler and David Craig have proposed eliminating the state's personal income tax. Ron George proposes eventually replacing it with a flat tax. What specifically would you do with the personal income tax?
Well, see, I'm not a professional politician, and sometimes I think people just sort of make promises that they can't deliver on, and I think people in both parties do that. The real issue is spending. So we can't just eliminate the income tax and have an $8 billion hole in the budget, which is what I think they're proposing. We've got to get spending under control. Over the past 7 years, since I left the state government when we were running things, the budget's gone up 35%. We've had an increase of $10 billion. National Governors Association said that we increased spending at a rate higher than 46 other states. Only three states in the country increased spending at the rate we did. We've got to get the spending under control. We have a spending problem more than a revenue problem, and you can't cut taxes until you start to cut the spending.
So what would you cut?
Well, we've identified cuts throughout state government. In fact, the federal audits and DLS audits, the Department of Legislative Services, have done audits in agencies that we've totaled them up just recently, and we found $1.7 billion that have been recommended as waste, fraud, and inefficiencies. That's $1.7 billion is a lot of money. It's a good place to start.
Can you tell me one?
Well, the one place, we just wasted $300 million on a healthcare website that doesn't work. Where 75,000 Marylanders have lost their health care insurance, I would immediately stop spending on that. The state of Virginia, for example, said they're going to set up our own website. We're going to we have great private sector exchanges, and we have the federal site that you can go to. Virginia signed up nearly four times as many people as Maryland did for our $300 million. So that's right off the bat, we'd stop wasting $300 million on things that don't work.
Let me pursue the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Yeah. So you're saying that your approach to that would be
My
to continue
would,
to implement it, but to do it on the federal
well, it is,
exchange.
It is the existing law. And, the people that are trying to get on there and trying to get health care coverage are unable to do so because we've failed. It's been because of politics and incompetence we've wasted in Maryland $300 million of hard-earned tax dollars, and 75,000 Marylanders have lost their health care coverage. So it's an unmitigated disaster. But
and so you're not satisfied with the O'Malley-Brown administration's plan to move to the Connecticut software?
I think it's ridiculous. So we're the first state in the country to abandon our website after we spent all that money. Now we're talking about basically renting a site for $60 million from Connecticut. I'm saying we shouldn't spend another penny of state tax dollars. We don't need to get some other state to help us limp along. We ought to just do what Virginia and other states have done. Let people go on the federal site or the private exchanges.
Speaking of money, you talked at one point about taking public financing for your gubernatorial campaign. Now you're not.
No, that's not true. I am.
You are.
We're very much focused on public financing. I think we've run our whole campaign focused on that. We've generated more than 2,000 donations in 70 days from small contributions from people all across the state, from all 24 jurisdictions.
But not enough to qualify for... Well, of the $453,000
we will qualify, and we will be the only ones on the Republican side that use the public financing. But we filed our first report after 60-some days in the race. We have another report that comes up end of May, and we're hoping that we will qualify and get the matching funds. It's a great way for grassroots campaigns like ours to compete with the millions of dollars in special interest money.
We're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you, you served in Bob Ehrlich's cabinet. You were appointment secretary. Your running mate, Boyd Rutherford, also served in his cabinet. What did you learn there that you're going to bring with you if you were elected governor?
Well, in my position, in the secretary of appointments, I appointed 7,300 people to all three branches of government. So I learned a lot about every single agency, about the legislature, about the judicial branch. And we appointed the most bipartisan, most diverse, and most inclusive administration in Maryland history. And, I worked every single day with Mike Miller in the all-Democratic Senate, and we had a nearly unanimous confirmation record. So I think I learned how to work with people across the aisle, and I learned a lot about state government.
I appreciate your coming in to talk to us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Larry Hogan, running for the Republican nomination for governor. We're speaking with all the people running for Republican nomination this week. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been listening this morning. Stay with us on 88.1.
You're listening to a special podcast that we here at Maryland Morning have put together with all of our interviews with Republican candidates for governor. We continue with Charles Lawler.
This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Maryland's primary election is taking place June 24th. Next week, we're speaking with the Democrats running for governor. This week, we're talking with the four men vying for the Republican nomination. Charles Lawler is one of them. He's a Marine Corps reservist and a businessman. He worked as the general manager in Maryland for Syntus Corporation, which provides uniforms and products to business. He lives in Newburgh in Charles County, and he joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why are you running for governor?
I'm running for governor because I'm very concerned, as many of your listeners should be, with the economic direction of our state, as well as the social direction of our state, specifically where it comes to how partisan politics continues to segregate the voting population. In fact, the entire citizenry, if you ask me. I'm running for Maryland because I believe in a new way forward. And that simply means we can find solutions amongst each other across partisan lines that are best for all Maryland citizens. When you look at our economy as an example, we had over 4,000 small businesses that left our state, going to other areas across our country, taking with them about $5.5 billion in tax revenue.
4,000 small businesses in what period of time?
In 8 years, since the incoming of this new administration. And by and large, these businesses, these small businesses and manufacturing companies have left because they've just been taxed to death, Sheila. They can't find or make or sustain necessary profits to hire and bring people on board. They want more employees because they want more innovation. I'm a GM of a location of 212 employees. I felt the same pinch just looking at my property taxes and the unemployment taxes, the labor. It's out of control.
Before I ask you more about taxes, tell
Please.
Me what specific you're usually described in the media as being a businessman.
Yes.
What is your work now?
Currently, I have my personal, I have a consultant business personally, but prior to 3 years ago, I was running my plant in Landover, Maryland, and I went on sabbatical from Cintas to run for public service.
Okay, you propose to phase out the state income tax on individuals and small businesses.
Over 5 years.
You plan to reduce the corporate income tax rate from 8.25% to 5%.
About a 41% decrease.
That's money that goes into the general fund to operate the state government. So how would you make up the difference?
Well, the beauty of it is, Sheila, over the long haul of 5 years, there won't be much of a difference to make up. And let me put that in perspective. Over since 8 years prior to now, we've increased spending by $10 billion, from $28 billion to currently $38.9, almost $39 billion. That's a 36% increase. If we would simply limit the growth of government, we don't have to sacrifice essential services. We don't have to stop what we're doing. All we have to do is limit the growth of government. And in essence, instead of growing at $2 billion a year or so, we only grow at $500 million to $1 billion a year. We would recognize enough savings just in 3 years to pay for the entire phase out of the personal income tax if we assume the same current revenues that are coming in this fiscal year. But even more so than that, we're going to look at taking a look at every tax, every tax bill that's been passed over 8 years. We're going to run external audits on them to ensure where the money's being taxed and its initial intent by law where the money was supposed to be going, that it's actually getting there. And when we find those instances and areas where they're not getting there, which we're going to find a lot of when you talk about 84 new taxes over 7 years, we're going to retire those bills altogether, return that money again back into the general fund.
The tax plan on your website already calls for repealing recent gas tax increases,
yes,
stormwater fees,
yes,
the so-called rain tax,
yes,
estate tax, eliminating the estate tax.
And the death tax.
And quite a few other, and getting rid of quite a few regulations.
Yes.
That's before any of this analysis that you say you're planning to do.
Well, absolutely. But keep this in mind, Sheila. Let's make sure we're fair and honest. When it comes to the rain tax or the stormwater runoff, that doesn't come back to the general fund.
That's
money
true.
Stays in counties, and counties decide where they want to take and place that money. So I just want to make sure that we're clear. And when it comes to this gas tax, it's supposed to go to the Transportation Trust Fund or the Transportation Fund, which we use for our roads, et cetera. However, if we keep robbing that Transportation Trust Fund every year the way we have for the past decade or so, it'll never be sustainable to build our roads. They'll simply keep finding another tax to pass on citizens to make up for shortfalls when they're using that money for other areas. The right question for us to ask is, where is that money currently going? For example, why do we have to, and not to barrage your listeners with even more numbers, but why do we have to rob $200 million from the pension funds from state-level employees and teachers just to cover a shortage of a purple line we're trying to build to connect Montgomery County and Prince George's County? That purple line was estimated to cost $1.2 billion. That's initially when we built the thing, when we said we're going to build the thing. After $20 million in survey analysis and projections, now that same purple line is going to cost us $2.2 billion. However, the federal government is still only on the hook for less than, I don't know, $500 million in revenue. So, I mean, I'm throwing those numbers out there because the amount of money that's being currently wasted, if we would simply find a way to stop wasting the revenues, make sure that we run external audits on these current tax bills, I guarantee you there's more than enough money on $39 billion to make sure we don't lose one essential service. Take this last point, $200 million that we just wasted on the rollout of the Affordable Health Care Act and the website, wasted it. Now we have to start all over? Where'd the money come that we could just throw away $150 to $200 million, blink an eye, and change direction?
It's Charles Lawler, Marine reservist and businessman who lives in Southern Maryland and is running in the Republican primary for governor. On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. The Affordable Care Act you just mentioned,
yeah,
embraced by the O'Malley administration.
Yes.
How would you deal with Obamacare as governor?
We have to ask the right questions, and here's how I would deal with it. The question we want to answer is, how do we ensure that every Marylander that wants health care can have affordable health care? How do we provide it? And there's three main ways we're going to do it, and I'll make it short and sweet. Number one, we're going to allow for competition from smaller health care companies regionally across state lines. That will, in essence, begin to lower
insurance across state lines.
Absolutely. That will begin to lower the cost. We're also going to take the healthcare industry as it stands and ensure that every citizen knows what they're paying for every product and every service within the healthcare industry. The healthcare industry is one of the few industries that you don't even know what you're paying for an x-ray. You don't even know what you're paying for tests. You don't even know what you're paying for the medication you're getting until after it's billed to your insurance company, and then they cover the cost through secondary billing. This has a way of escalating cost out of control. We're going to make sure those costs are posted. So as soon as you walk in and ask for an x-ray, you'll know the difference between one x-ray at this hospital and another, so you can make the right financially conscious decision, which will help drive down costs. The third and final way, meaningful tort reform. Here's what I'm saying to you, Sheila. We're not going to look at this and play partisan politics with it. If the Affordable Health Care Act doesn't work for our state, we're going to establish our own private exchange. We're going to drive costs down, and we're going to help to ensure that everyday Marylanders can afford health care here in the state of Maryland.
Maryland, as you know, is a heavily Democratic state.
It
about
is.
2-1 party registration. Democrats have a big majority in both houses of the legislature.
Yes.
No indication they're going to lose that in this year's election. So as a Tea Party Republican, how would you plan to work across the aisle as
Sheila
governor?
That's interesting. As a Tea Party Republican, let me say this. As a Marine officer, as a businessman, as a father of four daughters, a beautiful grandson married for 21 years, as a concerned citizen, here's how I'm going to do it. I'm already beginning to reach across the aisle, specifically to Democratic constituencies as well as Republican constituencies. I already have Democrats for Lawler organizations set up in Baltimore City, Prince George's County, and Montgomery County. I'm not going to already have them. I just received one email from another Baltimore Cityan that's on the bridge between whether or not she's going to support Gansner or me for governor and wants to have a sit-down discussion with me. I was at a governor's forum yesterday, a heavily Democratic forum, and left there with Democrats signing up for us to work with us, as well as, get this, they wrote us almost $1,000 in checks. We're reaching across the aisle to Democrats as well as Republicans to bring people together. The mantra simple, no more partisan politics. What's right for everyday Marylanders?
I really appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you.
Charles Lawler, he's running for the Republican nomination for governor. His running mate is author and political activist Ken Timmerman. We're speaking with all the major candidates in the Republican primary this week. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us on 88.1.
Thanks for listening to this special podcast from Maryland Morning. Check our website for more of our 2014 election coverage. We're at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm producer Matt Purdy. Thanks for listening.